We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Final part of today's show, I do want to share some thoughts on what I saw yesterday from watching the committee hearing. And I would encourage all of you, especially those of you who are making comments about what this person should or shouldn't say, this person doesn't have a right to say this because he's done that or he didn't do this or whatever, just listen to it, because I'm so tired of that part of the conversation. Number one, I've realized a lot of people don't know what the term hypocrite actually means. Number two, but like, if the greatest coach of our generation can't speak on this issue, who can? And someone said, well, Dabo can. Well, Dabo tried and people shouted him down as well. The reality is that you need the people with the biggest voices to be speaking about this issue. And the thing that I took away is so many of the comments about this are so lazy. And well, you know, now the players are making money, I watched it, guys. I watched it now. I'm at an hour and 23 of an hour and 37 minute video is what I've watched. There's nobody here saying they shouldn't make money. There's nobody here saying we should put a cap on how much NIL money they can make. There's nobody here saying it's not right that players are making money. There's nobody saying that. Somebody's saying, well, hey, Nick Saban used to pay players all the time. Now he's mad about it. Yeah. If you buy the premise, and I do to a degree, that Alabama bought players, he has even more reason to speak to what he's talking about, because they paid players. They had other schools offering kids money back then under the table, but he still understood the importance of how to develop young people and did a great job developing young people. And this notion that Nick Saban doesn't, you know, only cares about himself, coaches only care about themselves, that's so lazy. It is. Are there some like that? Absolutely. I looked this up. The Athletic had an article yesterday. Nick Saban's players at Alabama have gone on to make $2.26 billion in the National Football League. $2.26 billion. And one of the comments he talked about yesterday was the fact that one of the concerns NFL teams are having is that in the last few years, players are showing up with completely, they're not developed as people, they're not developed as players, they're more entitled. So these things are hurting these players' ability to be who they need to be at the next level. And that was a big part of it. And Nick Saban has a track record of developing young people. And I thought it was funny, because he didn't tell people to go to class. Well, he didn't really spend a lot of time talking about going to class. He's talking about a lot of other things. And so I'm going to get into some of the things that were discussed, share sort of my opinion on the whole thing and why I think people that are being critical of Nick Saban are missing the boat. There's certainly criticism that can be lobbied against Nick Saban for the way that he ran his program. There's no question. I think Nick Saban should have cared more about making sure his players were getting high quality educations. In some instances, I think that's true. Certainly I've heard it's better than it used to be, but we all know there's plenty of kids at Alabama that don't give a rip about academics, and they're not being encouraged to do so. But Nick Saban has always kind of said that, I mean, he's been kind of, he doesn't say it directly, but he's always been kind of upfront and honest about the fact that when it comes to that, it's like his job is to develop these people for the next level, to win championships and develop them for the National Football League. That's his primary concern. And he was, there's never been anybody better at that ever. And so isn't that kind of where you're wanting to go? And that's where you should be wanting to go. And so I think he absolutely should speak on this topic. I think he absolutely should be speaking on, you know, what is happening now, because it's no one has a problem with our players making money. People have a problem with the manner in which that money is being used as an enticement, the attitudes in which people are so focused on it that it becomes detrimental to the overall team product that matters. It becomes detrimental to their ability to be developed, to go to the next level. This notion that people think it's okay for a kid to every single year transfer from one school to another to make money. You may think that's okay. That's not good for young people, because what you're doing is you're losing your ability to, number one, get a degree, because you can't transfer four times in 4 years and graduate on time. It's virtually impossible.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Number two, you're losing out on a lot of opportunities to develop as a young person, to prepare yourself for the next level. So if you go out and you make $1 million in 4 years, or $2 or $3 million in 4 years because you're getting animal money, that's great. I hate to break it to you. $1 million doesn't go as long as it used to go, as far as it used to go. It doesn't. It's not the same kind of life-changing money it was 10, 20 years ago. It's just not. And when you are sacrificing the potential to earn $50 million to make five now, that's not smart. Do you make two now and then make 50 later? Is that guy better off than the guy that makes five now and makes two later? And so those things need to be part of the process. This is a very complex issue. And when I see people say lazy things like, well, you know, coaches do this and coaches do that and all this other kind of stuff, it's just lazy, because A, coaches are employees. Coaches are employees, which means if I don't do my job, you can fire me on the spot. Dan Mullen 2 years ago got fired in the middle of a season. You don't see players getting fired in the middle of the season. It just doesn't happen. You may get benched or whatever, but it's a completely different type of situation. And so it's just lazy. But the other part is there are things that are happening in the coaching world that I don't agree with and I don't approve of. But just because the coaches are that, you can fix that problem later. That doesn't mean that it's okay with the stuff that we're seeing now, or that a coach who was an employee and made decisions based on money can't then speak to the ills of what's going on in college football right now. Because again, I know of zero coaches that are publicly saying kids shouldn't make money. I don't know of any of them. I don't know any coaches saying they shouldn't make money. I don't. And so to me, if you're going to take this, the coach who has, if you're going to tell me that a guy that's won seven national titles and has developed players that have gone on to earn over $2 billion somehow can't speak to this issue, then who can? Then who can? That's the part that bothers me. And I wanted to kind of get that rant out of the way now. That doesn't mean that you can't be critical of the way Saban did certain parts of his job. You can absolutely be critical of the fact that I don't believe he put enough emphasis on developing the scholastic part of a student athlete. You can say, well, you know, my kids graduated. Okay, I know a lot of people that graduated but were literally in a drunken stupor for 4 years of college and got really not a lot out of it. But they showed up enough to pass tests and get their degree at the end of the day, 2.1 GPA, because I was high half the time I took this test and I was drunk half the time I did that, and I was just smart enough to kind of get by. I know people that did that. I went to school with people that did that. Just because you got a piece of paper and walk doesn't mean you got an education. I believe that Nick Saban, based on things I know and things I've heard, did not put enough emphasis on that part. I'll always be critical of that. But that doesn't mean that he shouldn't be speaking on the things he spoke on yesterday. It doesn't mean that he's not right about the things that he spoke on yesterday. It doesn't mean that his guidance isn't necessary and beneficial based on what he spoke on yesterday. And I get so tired of that. Well, this person made a mistake here, so their entire opinion is invalid because I don't like how they did this thing. That's nonsense. That's that lazy lack of intellectual honesty that we have, because if doing something wrong means that you can't speak on things, then no one should speak on anything ever. Nothing. We should all just be mutes, because everybody does things imperfectly. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody does things that are probably not the way that someone else would do it. That's true for everyone, including Lou Holtz, including Marcus Freeman, everybody. So this whole purity test that some of you have, that, well, I don't like the way Nick Saban did this. And here's the dumbest one. Nick Saban's mad because he can't dominate the way he used to. That is the dumbest thing I've heard. Y'all did just watch Alabama beat every single team in the SEC this past year, right? Zero losses to SEC teams this year. Zero. Didn't lose to any SEC teams this year. Dominated the SEC. Beat everybody, including Georgia. They went to the college football playoff. He just signed two great classes. His 2023 class might have been the best class he's ever signed. He's dominating the NIL era. And he told people, hey, look, if you don't fix this, I'm going to take advantage of it. And he did. So you're telling us, and here's what drives me nuts. Dabo said, I'm not going to partake in it. And the same people criticized Dabo for not taking part. You're not going to win if you don't do this. And then, so shut your mouth. And then when Saban, who did take advantage, speaks on it, well, you took advantage of the system. You should shut your mouth. Pick a lane, people. Pick a lane. Either only people who don't partake in it can talk about it, or they can't, because you all seem to find a way to criticize whoever talks about it. And so it's like, you're just bitching to bitch. That's basically what it comes down to. You just want to take this high and mighty, I'm pro player thing, and you've never played the game or never coached the game. And then some of the people that did play the game that are saying these things, I don't know what they're talking about. Because, like, you know that was not your experience. You know that. You know that if you'd had a chance to play for Nick Saban, you'd have taken advantage of it. You know you would have. And it's just frustrating because I feel like people are trying to – it's just this groupthink thing. Well, this guy said this. Well, I got to be on board. It's like what happened a few weeks ago at Notre Dame. Stephen A. Smith and Paul Feinbaum and what was it, Christopher Russo, they say the most idiotic – unintelligent things. And the whole next week, that's all anybody talked about because it's groupthink. Well, and nobody has the balls. And that's why I do respect Pat McAfee, even though I don't agree with a lot of things he says, because he'll say what he thinks, whether people like it or not. There's too much of this groupthink crap that goes around. And again, if Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney, who are polar opposites of how this thing have approached and are without a doubt the two best coaches of the last decade, can't speak on this, then who can? Who can? Who passes your purity test that says, okay, they are perfect. They never did anything wrong. They graduated 100% of their players. They never paid anybody. They had perfect discipline. They did all these things perfect. Who is that guy? The only person I know that's been that way died about 2,000 years ago on a cross. I'm sorry, I hate to break it to you. But if based on your purity test, no players have a right to speak on this. No coaches have a right to speak on this. Nobody has a right to speak on this, which is just ignorant. It means we can't talk about it. And so, yes, point out the things that Nick Saban did incorrectly during his career. I'm all about it. There were times when he would sacrifice discipline for players that needed it because it would help him win games. Never, ever approved of that. I understood why he did it. I didn't like it. Okay, but that doesn't mean he can't talk about this, and it doesn't mean he's not right on this. And if because a guy, it's like, oh, well, I can't, this guy, I don't want to listen to this guy because he's a Republican, or I don't want to listen to this guy because he's a Democrat. Has nothing to do, is he right or is he wrong? Is he speaking truth or is he not? That's all that matters. And this whole thing with Nick Saban, where people who I know for a fact did not listen to the testimony have these really strong opinions about whether or not he should or shouldn't say something because they read a statement. I had somebody that literally, I wrote an article, you guys read it, where I said, Notre Dame is the last independent because of greed and money. That was the title. Why? Because it's the greed and the money of the conferences and the NCAA that caused everybody else to leave. But some people read that, only read the headline, and got pissed at me. I should be fired by myself, apparently. I should fire myself. Or how dare I say this about Notre Dame? It's like, you clearly didn't read the article. And there's so many, they'll read a quote from Nick Saban without any context. Nick Saban had a comment yesterday where he said something along the lines of the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. It was a response to what was asked by a senator from West Virginia about how small states like West Virginia can compete with bigger states like Texas and Florida. And nobody that's actually responded to that comment has actually responded to the context in which he made the comment. Because he's right in his comment. And so I just wish that we had more people that had intellectual curiosity and had any ability to like take a complex issue and say, let's be adults and talk about this. It's just, let me throw this flamethrower out there so I get social media engagement. And that is completely destroying our ability to have discourse about important topics. Because everybody's looking for their social media fix. There's I was in a debate with some guy the other day, and his proof of him being right was the number of people that liked and responded to his post in support. Not the merits of the argument. It's, I had X number of likes. That's what we've turned into. And you've got so many people that are unwilling to take a hard stance and say, hey, this is wrong. This is what people that follow me will like me to say, so I'm going to say it. And then you push them at all on it, at all, to have to vet out their process. Well, I just was saying it in jest, or I just was kind of joking, or I was just, you know, this is just, and there's no depth at all to their conversation. It's like before I was a Christian, I used to love debating Christians because it would take like two questions to get them to be like, I got no idea what to talk about, because all they could do was regurgitate what they heard from their youth pastor. And once you kind of knock that argument out of the park, then nothing. There's no foundation to their belief system, and their knowledge. And that's what happens here in social media. You get these people that just, why do you believe this? Well, I heard so-and-so say something. Well, if all you're doing is following along with the group thing, then you have no core conviction. You have no depth of why you believe what you believe. And so it just frustrates me. And so that's my stance on this Nick Saban pushback. I have no problem with anybody that wants to say, I don't like the way Nick Saban ran certain aspects of his program. But two things you can't say. Three things, really. Number one, you can't say, well, why is he only speaking up now? Because that's just a lie, or you just don't know what you're talking about. He has been talking about this for years. He even gave a warning after year one. So one thing that's true, and I've heard this from a lot of people, is Alabama wasn't really living in the NIL world the way that other teams were. And because Nick Saban didn't really want to embrace that, not the NIL world, the buying players thing. He was all for his players getting paid. It's using it to get other people. Didn't really like it. But he said, if you don't fix this, then I'm going to have to take advantage of it. And the next year, they didn't do anything to fix it. And he went out and signed the best class probably he's ever had. So he's like, look, my job is to win. This is the system you created. I'm telling you, I'm going to take this system. I'm going to beat you even worse than I did before. And for people to be like, well, he's just mad because, guys, Bama's not coming down because of NIL, folks. I hate to break it to you. Bama's going to be able to dominate just like they always did if he wanted to do it. He doesn't want to do it anymore. And so that needs to be gone. The whole, well, he ran his program this way, so he can't speak on it. That needs to be gone. And the final piece is like, listen, there are legitimate criticisms that you can lobby against Nick Saban, but those criticisms do not mean he doesn't have the right, the ability to say what he's saying about this topic. It doesn't make him wrong on this topic. It doesn't. And so if you're someone who thinks that, you know, all Nick Saban cared about was money, I saw someone say something stupid about, like, you know, Nick Saban had a $20 million house. So what does that have? What is that? That's just you trying to say something that you think is cute, that you think your subscribers are going to like, and, oh, you're so smart. No, you're not. You're dumb. You're not very smart. And it shouldn't matter. I mean, it's a non-3 person, I think, or 24/7 sports person. So it shouldn't surprise you, but it's lazy. Nick Saban's not, one of the things he bragged about is all the deals that Bryce Young had, him and the AD. The only guy that kind of bothered me was the AD, but that's a different conversation. But the fact that Nick Saban has embraced the true NIL aspect of it, but pushed back for the pay for play, the argument he actually made, if you were someone who's who has the ability to actually like listen and absorb and learn, even if you don't agree, which we should all be, but we're not, you're going to say, okay, there's some things he did that I don't like, but that point right there, that's exactly what we all believe. And that's the driving thing that drives me nuts. Everybody complains about the current Wild Wild West, but whenever someone speaks up against it, well, you don't have a right to speak on it because you're the Republican, and you can't speak on it because you're a Democrat, and you can't speak on it because you paid players or you coached this or you did that. Again, we're back to this thing where nobody can speak on it because they have some disqualifying character. It's ridiculous. The fact is if Nick Saban can't speak on this, then just let's shut up and just let it be what it is, because no one can speak on it. Let's get into some specifics of the actual conversation, because I think that's important. Number one, with Nick Saban and the AD, it was Nick Saban, it was the AD at Bama, the Jim Phillips, the commissioner of the ACC. It was the two Cavender twins who should not have been there. I'm sorry. You couldn't find two student athletes, even female student athletes, that had more knowledge of what's going on than them. They were useless in this conversation. You had an attorney who's an NIL attorney who I actually think had some really good insight. I thought I was going to hate that guy because, again, my prejudice towards these NIL attorneys, I do not like the vast majority of them that I see on Twitter. This guy was real sharp, really good. I thought he did a really nice job, had brought some really good stuff to the table. And then there was a guy that is the head of the collectives. There's a collectives association. He was a part of it. And then a bunch of different senators, Republicans, Democrats. It was one of the most bipartisan things I've ever seen where people are like, hey, let's get to the bottom of this. Let's find some answers. I thought it was great. And we don't see that much in politics anymore. And for that reason alone, I think you should listen to it. A couple things. Number one, no one is against NIL. I didn't hear one person say NIL is bad. I didn't hear one person say we need to cap NIL. I heard none of that. Everybody was like pro NIL. It's about, and Nick Saban talked about this. We've been doing this branding thing for a long time, right? And it's about your branding to help prepare you for the next level. And it's paid off again, $2.26 billion. And that's going to go up higher because he's going to have more top 10 picks again this year. Everyone is against the pay for play aspect of it. And the biggest thing is you saw even the NIL lawyer was against the portal the way that it is now. I think what you're seeing from this group was a pushback against a couple things. And this is getting into the actual nuts and bolts of it. Nick Saban talked about this. He's very pro NIL, but he's against the booster driven collectives from the standpoint of, you know, these guys are getting this money and they're using it to like go buy players. He doesn't like that aspect of it. And most coaches don't like that aspect of it. It's a necessary evil, but they don't like it. There's also a lot of issues with the way people are being developed in this era. There's so many, one of the people, I'm trying to remember who it was, talked about one of the big things. I think this might've been Jim Phillips, but he talked about protecting student athletes. That's a big thing behind a lot of the things that people talked about. So here's some takeaways from those who didn't watch it. I would encourage you to watch. Number one, everyone's pro NIL. Everyone has accepted the fact that NIL is a part of this. That needs to be, anyone saying that this was about players not getting paid didn't listen. And they're just responding to what other people said. That, and at no point in time was that ever a part of the conversation ever. It was always about, this is what it is. It is these other aspects. NIL, we embrace it. It's a part of it. We like it. Let's protect it. And let's protect the players within it. I'll get to that. Other issues were basically creating safe havens. Is one word that was used. You know, they're all against employment. Even the NIL attorney and the collectives guy were against college athletes being called employees. And you even saw some of the Democrat senators who just not trying to get political, but there's been more Democrat that I've seen. There's been more Democrat politicians pushing for employment than Republican politicians. Those that know me know I don't have a positive view of either side of that aisle. But there were both of them were at least at this committee seemed to be against the idea of employment because of, I mean, there's a lot, one of the AD said something, which I didn't even think about. There are so many things that we do for student athletes that are not taxable, tuition, room and board, all these different things. You make them employees and all that stuff gets taxed. And so that was interesting. Title IX protections. They're going to have to do something about Title IX. And then, of course, some antitrust stuff, which is a little bit too deep to get into in this conversation. Basically, it's like we need to be able to govern ourselves and have protections from you that allows us to do this. Because one of the things that was talked about is the senator from West Virginia, no, Tennessee. She doesn't like the new, you know, president of the NCAA for whatever reason. She didn't express it. But she talked about rules enforcement. And the thing that was discussed by multiple people up there was, well, you can feel whatever you want to feel about the NCAA, but the reality is there's no subpoena power. There's only so much the NCAA can do. Now, I think the NCAA is full of crap, to be honest with you. We can do all that kind of stuff, but it really came down to being able to say, hey, there needs to be a body in charge of all this. And what should the government's role be? And basically they're saying, look, we need to be protected from some of these lawsuits. We need to be able to enforce our own rules, which is a whole different conversation for a different day. And we need to come up with certain, this is a big one. This is why it needs to be a federal case. People say, politics should be out of it. Well, it can't be. Because once schools start filing lawsuits, once, you know, these labor unions start getting players to do this, it starts kind of crossing over state lines. You know, so Florida's passed their NIL rules, and Tennessee's passed their NIL rules, and Texas passed their NIL rules. And the reality is, it's not the same in every state. They want to have some uniformity to the way NIL is done. I didn't hear anyone talk about uniformity from a number standpoint, which I hope they never get to. But that's a big thing, because you need to have some level of, this is the same everywhere, whether it's here. My issue with that, my immediate pushback against that was, a lot of them talked about, we need to have things that are equal. We can't have this school saying, you know, this is our rules because we're in this state, and this is our rules in this state. We need to have equity. They use the word equity. And in this instance, they were actually using the word equity appropriately, meaning we need to have a level playing field when it comes to certain aspects of it, revenue sharing, things like that. But my response is, why are you guys pro equity when it comes to NIL, but you're not pro equity when it comes to payouts from TV revenue? So the AD at Bama, who has a lot of influence with other ADs and obviously with the commissioner of the SEC, you guys want equity in the NIL sphere, but you want to go into a playoff system in which the Big Ten and the SEC get a higher payout of this. So my hope is that there's some ADs that listen to this, and if certain rules get passed for equity in regard to NIL and revenue sharing, and this is how I think it should go. Revenue sharing should basically be this. We get X amount of dollars that goes towards the players, right? And whatever revenue producing sports, okay? And so every student athlete gets X amount of dollars, and then put caps on collective. So let's say that they say, hey, look, every kid's going to get 20 grand a year. I'm just throwing out a number. It's just making a point. And then you say, okay, they can do that, and collectives can't give players more than 20 grand as well. So every player on scholarship is going to earn 40 grand no matter what. That's their version of rev. And again, I'm just throwing out numbers. So the rev share is going to be this. The collectives can do this. This is how much you have to raise. Okay, fine. You've got that down. And then whatever dudes do NIL or ladies do NIL outside of that, that's good for them. God bless America. There needs to be some level playing field. But I'm hoping that once that rule gets passed, that somebody then brings another lawsuit to say, hey, why is it okay? Why do we need equity here, but we're not doing it here? My hope is that out of all this insanity comes two things. Number one, well, three things. Revenue sharing, getting rid of using NIL and these things as an enticement for coming to a school, whether portal or high school. And then the third thing, that somehow this can go back to TV and playoff revenue and saying, if these things have to be equal, that has to be equal. And if these things have to, if amongst power four or five schools, that the NIL has to be the same, and that language has to be the same, and that rev share needs to be same, and this needs to be same, then the TV money needs to go back to this. So somehow, some way, get that 1984 decision of the NCAA versus the Board of Regents at Oklahoma needs to get overturned. And they need to go back to, if you're going to be part of this system, then we're all under the same contract. If the SEC signs this, they sign this, it all goes into a pool and it gets distributed just like it does with Major League Baseball. Everybody gets the same amount. If you truly care about a level, because I heard this phrase, level playing field, a lot. You can't in front of Congress say, We want a level playing field in this regard. At the same time, the commissioner of your league is trying to fight for the ability for his conference and the Big Ten to make more money in the playoff and with TV deals. It's either you want equity from that standpoint or you don't. That's what it boils down to. So my hope is if they go this route, that that then gets used to at some point in time, the next fight, which comes to the TV money, that you use that, you use this rule and this protections from Congress and these rules from the NCAA to say, listen, we're going back to this. TV revenue is going to be split from everybody. Everybody's going to get this amount. Whatever we negotiate, all the power fours, power fives, whatever, they're going to make this amount. That's my hope. A couple other things from this. A lot of people are against NIL not being used as an inducement, which I support. There was a lot of talk about protecting players and protecting athletes from bad actors. And I was very curious where they were going to go with this, but there seemed to be a lot of common ground with like the NIL and the collective people with the coaches and the AD, some things they disagree on, but a lot of it is like they all believe that there needs to be a greater certainty of who can be an agent or not, which I completely agree with. There needs to be certain standardized language, which I think is smart. So this collective can't take 50% of a kid's revenue or get this kind of like, there's some of these deals like where this, they own your rights to anything you do in the NIL sphere for the next 10 years. If you're a professional athlete, that's absurd. There needs to be certain standardized language in all NIL contracts. Now that standardized language, as I understand it, and if there's some lawyers in the room or people listen to it, you can understand, you can let me know if I'm wrong here. Standardized has to do with, you know, certain language that protects both sides. You know, you can only take X amount of a kid's revenue beyond that for your fee. You have to have this type of thing. You only own the rights to this. You can only prevent them from that. You can't create these really really burdensome rules that they are creating now to say, hey, we own your rights to this, 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 and this, and you can't do this, 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 and this. There needs to be some standard thing for that. That's my understanding of it. It doesn't mean standardized, meaning everyone gets $50,000 for everything that they do. I don't believe it's that. I don't think it's standardized for the amount of money you can make, but more so setting rules for what the language of those contracts can be. If I sign with a collective or I sign with this, you can't demand this from me or get that from me because this is the rules. I support that. One of the things that bothered me is they talked about, you know, they talked about full disclosure. I think that's smart because you have a lot of people lying about what they're paying players that they're really not. And so, hey, we played so-and-so $5 million last year. And then you find out they really didn't. There was some of that conversation. The NIL lawyer was very much against the portal, which I thought was good. They didn't get into specifics, but I thought that was good. Another thing is there was a lot of talk about bringing back, you know, the student athlete. And that's the part where I was the most annoyed, especially with Nick Saban and the AD at Alabama. They kept talking about a student athlete. And I'm like, listen, buddy, we know what's going on at your school. I don't want to hear you talking about student athlete. So I don't want to hear that student part. I don't want to hear that. But that doesn't mean that what they said wasn't correct. They're not the voices necessarily that should be speaking to that and what I mean, they can speak to it. I'm glad they speak to it, but you're not the examples of what that should look like is more of my thing because they are correct in what they're saying. There needs to be protections for these players and these type of things. And the other part too is if there's more standardized agents and standardized language, then there's less of the burdensome things about it. They also talk a lot about education in this space. I saw somebody in the chat that said something about, you know, you need to be doing things like taking certain classes. That's absolutely correct. They talked a little bit about that in here, about creating education in the sphere as far as education for contracts and taxes and things like that, their liabilities. Because what I understood was right now these guys are viewed as contractors and there's a different tax. I know this for my employees. There's a different tax obligation for a contractor than there is for a full-time employee. So there's a lot of things. And then one of the things that was being threatened by the AD at Bama, which he's actually right, even, you know, he's right, is if these players become employees or if we continue to go down this path where schools have to pay a certain amount of dollars, then the reality is they're just going to have to stop having certain sports, which they can't do. Well, here's the thing. So may say, hey, listen, I think one guy said, like, we have 29 sports. We might have to go down to like 6. Because right now, you have to keep certain sports because you have to have, for every male athlete, you have to have a certain number of female athletes, which I'm not against to a degree. So I'm not completely against Title IX. I think there's some things about Title IX that I like. There's some other things that don't make sense. Like in like they don't count football the same as other sports, but the reality is you're going to have to cut sports. But because of current Title IX, if I cut, you know, women's soccer, cause they lost us this much and this sport, this, you have to then cut the men's an equivalent number of men's sports as well. And so that's going to create a lot of issues. And so you start taking money away from, you know, schools and to pay players, then you have less money to now give to those sports. And now those budgetary things become a problem. Like I think the AD at Alabama, and this is true for a lot of schools, said that they lost something like $40 million on their outside of football and basketball, the rest of their sports lost $40 million. What they have to pay coaches, travel, uniforms, facilities, those schools, those sports are not driving revenue. They're losing money to travel the women's soccer team, to clothe the women's soccer team, the men's soccer team, true for both, swimming teams, either side, track, either side. You're losing money on those sports just within themselves. It's the money over here that pays for that. You take the money over here away, we don't have the money to pay that. If you take the money over here and start making us pay the players directly through that, then we're going to have a problem. So that was a very interesting conversation that there's a lot of truth to that not enough people are talking about. So those are just kind of some of my takeaways. I felt good about the fact that it did seem like even on the congressional side, whether you're talking about Ted Cruz, who's a conservative Republican, or you're talking about Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut, who's a hardcore leftist, but he's very far on the left side. There's a lot of common agreement between them on certain things, like not being employees, protecting students, which I thought was good. There was a lot of things about, you know, education of players, protection of them. And another thing they talked about is creating a system in which I think it was Richard Blumenthal that talked about this first, but creating a system where beyond your playing career, there's a certain period of time where schools are obligated to make sure they're taking care of players' medical needs. Y'all know I've been about that for a long time. So I was very happy. I do believe it was Richard Blumenthal, who's a Democrat from Connecticut, who came up with that, which I was happy to hear. And there was a lot of agreement about things like that. So there was a lot of things that I felt like this actually felt like a productive conversation. You know, you had people on the right and left kind of saying similar things, like we need to figure out the specifics of this. But the other thing I liked is right and left, you had a thought of, hey, we don't need to be the ones controlling all of this. What do you want from us? What do you need from us? Well, you need these certain protections. We got to do this. We got to pass this. We got to do this. All right, cool. Then you got to create a system to go run it. But then the problem is there has to be some way of overseeing that system. And that's the problem. Is how do you create that system? Do you overhaul the NCAA? Do you do away with the NCAA and create a new governing body? Does it become a congressional oversight thing, which I don't think is a good idea? That's going to be tricky to figure out what's the best path forward. Is, you know, and I don't know that I know the answer to that. I know what I think and what I would like. I'd like to see a new governing body that schools kind of buy into that controls some of these things. And kind of get away, just get rid of the NCAA because I think it's too scarred. I would much rather see the NCAA get overhauled than to see the Congress take it over. I think we can all agree on that. But it didn't seem like there was anybody there that had an appetite for Congress taking this whole thing over. That was a good thing to see. So I thought there was a lot of good coming out of here. I felt really good about. It seems like Congress, the people that I listened to, understood on both sides that employment is not the way to go, that players deserve a cut of the pie. Totally agree with that. There needs to be protections put in place for players and student athletes, which, again, I completely agree with that. So there was at least a lot of common ground that I thought was good. And it was, I mean, I'm one of those losers that listens to congressional hearings, and these things are – the last 4 or 5 years, I stopped listening to them because it's useless. It's just, I'm on this side, so I got to believe this. I'm on this, I got to believe this, and we hate each other, and it's useless. This was a really productive conversation. You're like, this is what it's supposed to be about, and I thought that was good. So if you haven't watched it, I would encourage you to go watch it. There's a lot you're going to get from it. If you're someone who's responding, if you have an opinion on what Saban should or shouldn't say, and you didn't watch the whole thing, don't be that guy. go watch it. You can have the same opinion, but at least it's an educated opinion. I would encourage you to watch it. Don't go into it. Don't thinking, well, I don't like Republicans. I don't like that guy. I don't like Democrats. Just get all that out. Look at it as a bunch of people trying to solve a problem. And if you look at it from that standpoint, I actually thought it was a really good session. I don't know what's going to come of it. I don't have a lot of faith that anything good's going to come of it just because there's no track record of it. But I'll say this, after watching, and again, I got about 10 minutes left of it. After watching this hearing, I feel a lot better that there's an appetite to fix this in a way that's productive for students and the schools than I did before. And that's a positive. So that was my one big takeaway from it that made me feel good about it. And I'm hoping that it opens up a little bit of a sliver that somebody down the road can go say, well, if we're going to talk about equity here, why are we not talking about equity when it comes to TV money and playoff revenue money? That'll be an interesting thing to see if it comes from that. So we'll see how it plays out.